well, it's Halloween again almost, and we are here to celebrate it at Bitches on Comics, the show we talk about stuff. I'm Sarah Century, one of the many hosts that is on this show, and I am here to introduce Monica Estrella Negra, who is another host on the show.
Hello. Hi. I'm Monica. I am thing number two of Bitches on Comics. And I haven't been here in a while because my ADHD has allowed me to forget about everything that I agree to do.
You also have like a wild job, so let's be fair.
Oh yes, I'm also the resident abortion liaison, so that's pretty cool. It's very sick.
I was doing Arsenio Hall.
Moms love me.
I'm so glad I don't. Monica.
Yeah, I'm so glad I don't believe in hell. But anyway, I'm also here joined with our other co-host, Essie Flenor.
Well, hello. I couldn't help but chime in because you were like, oh, it's my fault. And I was like, or is it the context of your existence? Because you're out there fighting the good fight, my friend. So don't worry about it. I'm so happy to be here. It's like the full bitch family. I've just embraced calling everything bitch because at one point I was a little offended when someone emailed us and said, hello, lovely bitches. It was like 48% offended, 52%. I wish I was as bold as you, my friend. And now I've come full circle. So I'm so happy to be one of the bitches here with the lovely bitches. I am so delighted. Yeah, we've got three hosts, but we've got two guests/hosts/longtime members of Bitches on Comics. First, I want to welcome our newest member to the team, Priya Saxena. Hi, Priya.
Hi, I'm Priya. I am the editorial coordinator for Bitches on Comics and Queer Spec, which means I did a lot of stuff for Decoded Pride, and I'm doing other stuff for things that are in the works right now. And this is my first time on the Bitches on Comics episode, so I'm excited.
Woo!
Yay!
And I would like to introduce Kate as well.
Oh, hi. I'm Kate Warner. I've listened to every single Bitches episode many times, at least twice. I'm the editor of, well, you know, I just make the podcast sound like loud and stuff.
Loud and good.
Yeah, and I've been doing that since the big gigs, and I love it, and I love these people, and I'm happy to be here.
We've had you on to talk about horror before, but we also had you on to talk about Star Trek.
Yes, that was a lot of fun, and I hope to talk about Star Trek some more. I actually geeked out at the last Star Trek Day, which was just a thing that happened in August, because it's like the day that the original series came out, like a million years ago. Anyways, not to go into that, but my trickiness has increased since then, if that's possible.
I was just remembering that whenever they released the prequels, there were people in line, I think, for to see the Star Wars prequels, and there were Star Trek fans that were really upset and mad at them, and they were like, everybody was cosplaying, but one side was Star Wars and the other side was Star Trek. And they were holding up signs and being like, you suck. Star Wars is the worst.
Nerd on nerd hate.
I love that so much.
I would pay to see that fight.
I know.
I honestly would.
I know.
I wonder how long it would last.
Not that long.
I think it would go to the ground in 5 seconds, I think. It would just be a pile of nerds crying.
Batleths and lightsabers everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
This just makes me think of a fan art I saw once of Captain Kirk kissing Obi-Wan.
That reminds me of that too, and I didn't even know about it.
So many people would be furious to know that exists. You know what? If you've made that art, please at Bitches on Comics on Twitter and on Instagram. We want the people
sell
to
prints.
See it.
That's going to be our new show art.
Yeah, we're done. You know what? You thought we were one kind of pod. We're a whole different one. Get over it. You know what that reminds me of? This is like, I don't know. Bruce Willis was in all those Die Hard movies. There's one where like he shows up in Kevin Smith's basement and Kevin Smith is like, oh, Boba Fett rules. John McClane goes, I was never into Star Trek. I really prefer Star Wars. And Kevin Smith's face, I was like, I just want that frame. That was amazing. Oh, that's what I know about Star Wars versus Star Trek.
Yeah.
A movie reference within a movie that none of you have seen. It felt dun, so important.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, today we are here to talk about horror and some specific horror movies. Each of us chose a film. They are wild.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I cannot wait to talk about them. We're going to go chronologically. So we're going to start with the oldest film. So I want to, you know, Monica, I'm going to kick it to you. What movie did you choose? Why did you choose it? And then just go off. I can't wait.
Awesome. So I chose Abby, which is a 1974 blaxploitation classic, otherwise known to me as the Mixed Up Files of Monica Estrella-Negro. And this movie is quite possibly one of my favorite movies and quite possibly opened me up to the world of horror, because when I first found out about this movie, I had no idea that the movie had existed, because there's a very specific reason as to why this movie, though it opened up to very good fanfare, why it pretty much was obscured, like scrubbed off the face of the planet, basically. It was called The Black Exorcist when it was first released. And because it was called that, Warner Brothers, our favorite, who are also still making moves in today's world.
Yeah.
But not making money.
But not making just money.
Losing lots of money. Yeah.
Decided to sue American International Pictures, which was the film's distributor, and the film director, William Girdler, who was known as a producer of many cult films, like B films or whatever. They sued it because they said that it was copyright infringement. However, the movie, while it did have some elements of possession and whatnot, even the director himself said that, you know, sure, we made Abby to, you know, it may have some elements of The Exorcist, but also the film was inspired by 1968's Rosemary's Baby. However, even though there were many copycats that were made of this movie is specifically special because it features an all-Black cast, and the story in itself borrows from African traditional spiritual folklore, which makes it even more special in my eyes, because there have been so many movies, and especially in the history of Hollywood, that has villainized African spiritual tradition in the way of asserting white supremacy within all of its ideology within horror. African spiritual tradition, African traditional spiritual practice has always appeared in horror movies. I think the first appearance would have been within White Zombie, or any type of zombie film that was made probably in like the 1940s, because that also comes from Haitian folklore of the zombie within voodoo practices. And that movie and that specific trope has always played into anti-Blackness when it comes to what specific horror tropes would align itself with Blackness. So Blackness in itself is the actual horror of the film, the horror of the unknown and the demonic and things of that nature. But Abby is different in a way because they don't necessarily fight the evilness of this African spiritual folklore with white supremacist, like Christian values or whatever. They actually embrace an entirely different ideology where they go from... Actually, let me just read you the synopsis. So Abby, who's played by Carol Speed, who actually just recently passed away a couple of months ago, RIP, she plays a woman who is possessed by a Yoruban sex spirit. And the sex spirit, and I put that in quotes, is actually named Eshu. And Eshu is a powerful deity within Yoruba, Yoruban culture. And Yoruban spiritual practice actually comes from Nigeria. And the film opens up with William Marshall, who plays Dr. Garrett Williams, teaching his students about the culture of Nigeria and all of his anthropological studies there. And the story actually starts where he goes on this adventure to Nigeria and he finds this box, which is kind of like a puzzle box. It looks like it has the symbols of Eshu and it has an erect phallus on it, like literally a giant penis. And he's talking about how when he opened the box, it unleashes this demon. And somehow it finds itself to this woman named Abby, who's this preacher's wife. She's very dainty. She's very sweet. And she's doing everything that she's supposed to be doing right in life in the 70s. And she becomes possessed by the spirit. And what literally happens is that she begins to revolt against everything that she thought was normal. So she was the preacher's wife, so she literally has to put on this facade of being perfect and, you know, being obeying and, you know, having like the cute house and whatnot. And she literally just goes the opposite way. And in my eyes, I feel like the film is commentary on the respectability politics that are placed on Black women as a whole. And in this specific notion that she is a preacher's wife, it also speaks to the Christian indoctrination of Black communities and how that indoctrination that essentially started with enslavement of African peoples on this country as a way of keeping them docile, she literally begins to revolt against that. And I think that in itself is a powerful statement as to, one, the respectability trope of Black women in film as a whole, because I still feel like there's a huge problem with seeing Black women as being messy or being anti-heroes or anything like that. Like, there could only be two extreme sides to being a Black woman represented in film. She's either the sassy Black friend or she's the very God-fearing, demure woman. Abby rips that entire trope apart. And the fact that it was made in 1974, like, blows my mind, because I feel like a lot of studies were not focused on the fact that this is like a main interpretation of Black women and what they can actually do on the screen.
I knew that you would drop some knowledge on us. That was amazing. I'm like, oh my God, that's like the best lecture on religion I think I've ever gotten.
Yeah. And it goes so I spoke at the University of Pittsburgh like a couple years ago, and it was about the zombie. And there's actually this person named Sarah Juliet Lauro who wrote this book, and it's all about the transatlantic slave trade and zombie culture. And when movies like White Zombie like came out, the main point of horror was the idea of Blackness as being like this ultimate like demonic energy that was used to terrify, you know, mainly white audiences. And therefore, like, the demonization of traditional African spiritual practice like became a norm within horror tropes. Even in Child's Play, where Chucky uses like voodoo and talks about Dambala, and Dambala is a deity in voodoo practice. That in itself is just like a very scary unknown, which is really funny to me, because when I think about movies like The Omen and The Exorcist and like how Catholicism is seen as like, you know, this pure white thing, and then like this demon like comes out, like I feel like that's a bit more scarier in essence. And I was actually talking to Sarah about this because I watched the new Omen movie the other day. And I was just like, it's so funny because like it takes like the opening scene like takes place in the Vatican. And like there's like these priests that are like following like the Antichrist star or whatever else. And then they just go on like this whole film montage where they're showing all of these catastrophes happening, like all centered in the U.S. or Europe. Like they show footage from like September 11th and whatever. And they're just like, you know, this is the signaling of the end and whatnot. And I just think that that's just really funny because like everything within the end is always within a Western context. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's funny because of Westerns, like because of the Western world's imperialism in Africa and abroad and the damage that was done there, to vilify like the actual spiritual practice of the people that you condemned and enslaved, to say that we were actually the demons and we were actually the scary ones, is like pretty fucking rich, right? So it's just really interesting to me how that works. But that's why Abby is also so interesting, because there is one prolific scene where she is singing in church. And
oh man.
Her husband is giving like this huge sermon, you know, and she just starts to flip out. Like she just like starts cursing and doing all of these, and like people are just like freaking the fuck out. And it just reminds me of being like this weird little goth kid and like people just not knowing what the fuck to think of me, and how I would just, you know, it was just like the shock value, right? I like to get a rise out of people. So seeing that scene in particular just reminded me of like how I would go to such lengths to let my elders know that I was not the you know, the use that they wanted in their bloodline. And so there's just so many identifying factors, but I definitely identified it with it in the better sense of just like knowing that like my heritage and like my ancestors' heritage, even though they didn't know much of it because it was also stolen from them when their ancestors were stolen from their homeland, it's not something to be afraid of, but it's something to be embraced. And even though the film does like end, you know, like with Abby being saved and whatnot, spoiler alert, but like because like she's being saved and whatnot, the true message of the film to me is that I don't think Abby did anything wrong. I think she was just breaking out of the mold of like what our own community placed onto her, because women really have no choice as far as like what indoctrination series they have to partake in, because that is what is expected because it's tradition. And so I think that it was also just a reminder to me that sometimes it is good to like not be that respectable person, that sometimes you just have to break free because people are going to always put their opinions on you in the first place. But
I was going to say that the ending is pretty tacked on, though, right? Like we have her kind of doing all of this really outrageous stuff for the entire movie, pretty much after like the first 20 minutes or so. Right. And then the ending is just like, it's fine. They're fine now. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah. They just like had to wrap it up. And like also she was saved to like a man's hand of being like, you need to get out of the juke joint and go back home to your husband, because she was going around and just like drinking whiskey and listening to jazz and she just fucking lost it. And I'm just like, dude, she's like fucking, she's lit. Like that's cool as fuck. Like,
drinking whiskey and listening to jazz is like a Thursday for me. So I'm just like, I really appreciate this character. I also love the demon, the voice of the demon who's like,
oh my God,
murder is fun and awesome. Like, yeah. I love that guy. But you've mentioned that this really resounds with you. And I've noticed there's certain scenes where, having known you for a while, I can say, like, there's this scene that specifically, whenever I was rewatching it, because I had seen it before I met you, this was my first time rewatching it since I've known you. And whenever Abby is bouncing on the bed and then is just like, like, opens the eyes and is like, raw, that I was like, that's Monica. That's like one of my favorite moods of Monica. Jump on the bed and being like, ha-ha.
Yeah. And the thing is so Eshu in itself is like also known as the trickster and the guardian of the crossroads. So Eshu is also very childlike in nature and very playful and likes to stir up shit, essentially. So I think that Carol did like a really good job in embodying that energy. And I think that if you don't know much about like Yoruba spiritual practice or about traditional African spiritual practice, you probably wouldn't recognize some of the deities that are being talked about or some of the characteristics of those deities. Mm-hmm. But for Carol, like she definitely embodied like what the deity Eshu is supposed to represent.
Like that. Was he right?
Yeah. So actually Eshu, the demon that was possessing her was actually a wannabe Eshu.
Okay.
And that's why he was like, oh, you know, you have to get out of here because, or whatever, because
you're going to piss off Eshu.
Basically, essentially, yeah. So it was probably what they presumed to be the demon was actually imprisoned by Eshu.
Oh.
And because Eshu is a trickster and like creator of whirlwinds and chaos or whatever, it just makes sense that Eshu would just have some like chaotic demons that he just stored away. It's just like, you know what? Let's have some fun. I'm going to send out my friends and we're just going to go stir some shit up. And Abby was just the unfortunate person that had to happen to you. But I think that she actually got a pretty sweet deal because, I mean, she did get rid of a lot of annoying people, like that one nosy ass white woman who didn't learn her lesson.
Oh, so nice.
Yeah, I liked that scene as well.
You know, there's this moment when she's, you know, they are like, oh, no, Abby's sick. We'll take her to the hospital. And they're like, oh, she's mentally ill. She's not mentally ill. Oh. You know, there's sort of like the trappings of that whole pretty typical horror trope of what is mental illness? What is, hey, we're going to talk about that more today, I think. You know, what is perception, reality, what have you? But for me, it was when she starts leaving the hospital and she is just straight up knocking people down in the hallway. And they're like, Abby, or they call her by her last name, which I can't remember. Mrs. something, Mrs. something, Mrs. something. Where are you going?
She goes, I'm going home, bitch. And just shoves one of these women like down the stairs. And I was like, that's me. That's me at every event. There's just a moment where that demon takes over me. I'm going home, bitch. Bam, and I'm out of here.
I feel like if you've been like mistreated in a medical setting, then like that scene is like very cathartic.
Yeah.
And also, it's just, you know, another reminder of just like, you know, the woman who rebukes respectability politics is automatically mentally ill or she's hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I just always, as somebody who has multiple mental illnesses, I feel like I've always had to deal with that, you know? So I think it's just really funny to like watch this movie and see her just like push her way out the hospital and just pushing like the person down the stairs, just like, yeah. Leave me the fuck alone. I'm actually okay. Though, I mean, she was technically possessed by a demon, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she was fine. She was fine.
Yeah, even that time when she fucked that guy to death. Actually, those three guys. No, but that was fine. You know, people die when they're fucking all the time. It wasn't her fault.
That's true.
Whatever. Who cares? You know, I also think there's, like, it lays this amazing foundation. I'm glad we started with Abby first because there's just so much rejection of women are weak, women are fragile, women need to be protected and helped, even though there's like some muddling of that in the conclusion. Let's all remember it's 1974, right? And even though we now don't get to see the movie, at the time they were certainly trying to make something people could watch a lot of times,
right,
before everything blew up. So there is some caring about, oh my god, censors, Kate, we're gonna come back to that. And I think that's really interesting because it just, again, it's such an incredible film in so many ways, and that rejection of, you know, it's the rejection of Christianity. It's the rejection of respectability. It's the rejection of that wife role, mm-hmm. right? It's that, what, you think I'm a wife? That moment when she said that, do I look like someone's wife? And those guys were like, hell no. I was like, ooh, I really love that. And so I just thought Abby was so rich. Like, I'm gonna watch it a million more times and find something new every time, I think.
Yeah, and I liked the, like, how part of it is about her, like, owning her sexuality, mm-hmm. like the scene where like the demon inhabits her is like very sexual, and then it's like it seems like for the first time she like is owning her sexuality instead of just like having like to just like do what other people expect of her. Mm-hmm. So I like, there were parts of the movie that did feel like The Exorcist, but then there was also a lot that, like, didn't. So it definitely seems unfair that, like, this one was, like, yeah.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure we can just thank good old-fashioned racism for that one. I definitely want to have this movie remastered. I know that like lots of people have tried to get the rights to this movie, but because of the litigation that happened behind it, it's just so very difficult to obtain the rights for it. But I feel like this movie just needs to get more credit. Because like I said, I still have not seen this ultra quote unquote problematic, like, Black woman in any film that I could possibly think of to this extent, to where she definitely rebukes all of the tropes that have been put on the Black woman within cinema. So I would just ultimately love to see this movie get remastered because all of the copies of it are pretty bad and the sound definitely mm-hmm. needs remastering.
Yeah.
But like I said, because of the litigation behind it, I think it'll be really difficult to get that. I should also mention that this movie was released on Christmas.
Yeah.
I think that's badass.
I was going to end on that because I was like, did you know that it was released on Christmas though? Merry Christmas.
It's fucking rad.
It is rad. I was going to say, too, that the dialogue in this movie is really good. So it would be awesome mm-hmm. to hear it remastered because I think Abby has all of the best lines. Can't yeah. take anything away. Mm-hmm. The person with the best lines is the hero, in my opinion. And I know that that doesn't hold up if you look at pretty much any movie because the villains always have the best lines. But in my mind, Abby has the best lines, therefore does nothing wrong in the whole movie. But I would love to hear it remastered. I want to see it remastered. I think that there's a lot that they could do with it.
Right. And the dialogue is great, but there are some things that are kind of drowned out because the audio is a bit like flippy, you know, and also the captions are not that great. So who knows?
Well, I hate to do it, but I think we have to move on to the next film. I am sure we will come back to Abby. I think Abby relates to every film we're talking about today, so I'm looking forward to that. So going chronologically, the next film chosen was the one chosen by me, and that's Ginger Snaps. That's from 2000.
Whoop, whoop.
And yes, Ginger Snaps is about some werewolves, but really it's about two sisters, Ginger, played by Catherine Isabel, who became just a genre queen, and Bridget, played by Emily Perkins, also a genre queen. And they live in this small town, and they're like, we're the Suicide Sisters. Like, we're dead on the scene or out by 16 is like they're saying. Because, you know, they're 90s kids. They're depressed. They're goth. It's the right move. And then they don't get their periods when normal, I'm using scare quotes, girls do. So they're old and it's weird. And then one night, Ginger gets her period. And what else should happen? But a werewolf strikes and attacks her. And it is her sister Bridget who saves her. But wait, something's wrong. Ginger's not acting quite like she used to. It's a great werewolf movie. I'm like, you know what? Werewolves, werewolves, werewolves. When I watch a werewolf film, I am looking for, like, what makes this its own distinct lore? And I gotta say, the titties on the werewolf really, really make Ginger Snap stand out.
That was the deciding factor. Push it over the
edge. That's the one.
The absolute teats. Aren't there, like, six of them, too? It's like wolf two titties. Wolf titties, and four of them are not in a bra. So I'm like, how did she decide which to put in the bra? Like,
I put four bras on Batty for modesty.
Well, you know what? Those are a lot of titties. It's a lot of titties. Okay, so I had never seen Ginger Snaps. I chose it because it was one of those films that's like been on my list to watch for forever. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to watch Ginger Snaps. I'll choose that for our movie. I regret nothing. I think it's a plus film. I love that it makes me deeply uncomfortable at various points. Mm-hmm. but, you know, for you all, when did Ginger Snaps come into your life?
Oh, man. High school. And it was my jam. Yeah. Mostly because, I am that sad 90s kid that was depressed, Essie.
As I was saying it, I was like, I think I'm describing Monica.
Yeah. So actually, funny story. And I think it's funny. But me and my other group of sad, depressed lesbians mostly, we were really obsessed with this movie. Like, we watched it every time we hung out with each other. And as one of my end of year art school projects, I was like, why don't we make our own suicide death pictures? And we actually recreated our own suicide photos. And I still have them if you'd like to see them. It's actually really funny. Can you please?
I would really like to see them.
Yes.
That's amazing.
We did it at my friend's Nicole's house, and her dad was like super Catholic, and he had a whole room just filled with Catholic saints. And we did a bunch of stage death photos in that holy room. And I can share the photos with you. But yes, Ginger Snaps was a very big part of my teenage years.
And it's so like queer and bi and weird, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh man, when she looks at her sister and she's like, do you wanna? We're barely related anymore. I was like, Ginger, you nasty bitch. I love it.
Gross. I forgot about that part almost.
Incest.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And we'll talk about that with Stoker because I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. There were a lot of those moments. Oh, man. I wish it had that kind of history with Ginger Snaps. I watched it much later in life, but I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only watched it like recently because I watched it for this podcast. And then when I was watching it, I was like, I'm so glad I wasn't the only person who chose a movie that has incest.
Okay, I'm going to go, you know what? The difference is, Priya, I didn't know mine had incest. That's fair.
calling you. I'm just teasing. You know, I probably would have chosen it nonetheless. It also gives me big Jennifer's Body vibes.
Yeah.
Like, I like that about Ginger Snaps where it's like...
It gives me big, like, All Cheerleaders Must Die vibes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I haven't seen that.
It's like a Lucky McKee, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's like this scene where she's walking down the hallway and she's like all, I just got my period and I may be a werewolf. No, she is a werewolf at that point. You know, she's turning and she's like walking through the hallway and everyone like suddenly notices her. You know, she's all like, feels like hot shit.
Yeah, there's this scene just like that
in All Cheerleaders Must Die, but they're like three girls and they're like all fucking undead at this point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that kind of scene because Jennifer's Body dead on has the same scene. I had totally forgotten about it, that like pink shirt with the red hearts that she wears and like the short shorts or the skirt. Mm-hmm. And she's just like pounding her feet down the hallway while everyone else is mourning. What a bitch. I love her so much. Yeah, I love mm-hmm. those vibes. That's good. That's good shit right there. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but apparently being a werewolf really gives your hair volume. You know, you get the lift you're missing without it. Maybe it's, you get a double coat kind of thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm here for it. I also love redheads as one. And so, of course, I was like, this movie's perfect. No notes. A redhead in charge. Done.
Oh, and don't forget about Mimi. Mimi Rogers.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes.
The mom. Love it.
Yeah, she was perfect as a Canadian suburban mom.
When she is like, I will get you kids in this car right now and we will leave. And she's like, what about Dad? She's like, he wouldn't understand. He'd just blame me. They all would. Like, you know your kids killed a girl. You're just fine with it. I love when
she like is figuring out that her daughter's committed murder and she has these like cute Halloween earrings. It just makes it perfect.
Yeah.
I just love the period talk at the table and the dad's just like mortified. He's just like, we're eating.
Honestly, that's one of my favorite things about this movie is the fact that like there's so much period shit in it. Yeah. And it's like that never happens in movies.
Mm-hmm. Especially not werewolf movies, right? Too.
Which it ought to, because that makes sense.
It makes sense. The full moon, werewolves. Yes. Like I always say, like, oh, I'm gonna turn into a werewolf soon. Because I know that I'm gonna be on the rack.
We're talking about. If any agents out there are listening, I did just write a novel about this.
Oh, shit.
That's right.
What?
That's the other reason I chose Ginger Snaps. I just wrote a novel about a trans werewolf who's facing their period with a
shameless
fear.
Self-promotion.
Sounds great.
Fuck yeah. I am on. You know what? No one else is doing it.
I'll be a beta if you want. I'll read it. Hot. Give me your shit.
Oh, that kind of beta.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, beta wolf. Damn.
Yeah.
I see your head is in the sexy wolf game. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what? I've been watching a lot of Teen Wolf too, and they're big into alpha beta, and I'm like, this is hot. And everyone's like, this is straight. And I'm like, what part of this is straight? That guy is clearly having sex with that guy, which is great. That guy is having sex with that guy and that girl and that guy, also great. Everyone's like, that literally never happened. And I'm like, well, it did to me. It did to me.
Third eyes not opened.
Losers.
One of the things I really liked about Ginger Snaps is like the emphasis on her like removing her body hair. Like I just think that is really interesting because like so often like in werewolf movies and things like it's a male werewolf, so that isn't so much of an issue, but I like that it's like she has to like constantly shave herself like just to like fit beauty standards. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
And there's two sequels to Ginger Snaps at least. I think there might be more. And I watched the second one, which heads in a whole direction. You're like, what the fuck? And features a very young Tatiana Maslany. And she is so cute. And I'm not going to say any more words. You have to watch it. People were like, I don't know if the sequel is very good. And I was like, it's a sequel. What do you want? And it's just like Bridget shaving a ton though, Priya. Yeah. Like, that's like the real start of it is like that shaving, bleeding from cutting yourself, periods. It's like you take it to the next level with the other sister. Super duper fun. I actually thought it was outstanding. Okay, I'm going to watch the third one for Halloween because I'm like, whatever. I love garbage. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So even if it's bad, I'll enjoy it. Yeah, Ginger Snaps was very delightful. I was like, I too am outraged at the expectations on my body. I too am angry because I have to have a period. I too, you know, that's how I felt watching the whole thing. So
Thank you for watching with me, friends.
It's wonderful.
Has anybody watched Company of Wolves? It's like an 80s werewolf movie.
Put it on the list.
I'm going to say put that one on the list for sure, because that one's in the 80s. I believe that Angela Lansbury's in it. Definitely, it's a werewolf story. It takes kind of a Red Riding Hood theme, but from Red Riding Hood's perspective, essentially. And it's great. I think everybody should see it. If you enjoyed Ginger Snaps, then you would definitely love that movie.
Booyah.
Awesome. One of the things I just noticed in this movie was... it's just that there was this double standard of telling after sex, you know, like if you're a dude and you tell after you have sex, you tell everybody and it's like, you know, well, this is a super trope that hopefully it doesn't exist anymore. But and then, you know, if you're a girl that says you had sex, you're a slut. Right. But so there was also this like flip of that when it was like he was in the car and he's like, I'm the guy, you know, like,
oh, my God, I love that scene. And she's like, so I'm the guy. You brought it up. She's like, you're the guy.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I loved that. I love anything that, like, this happened in Abby, too. Anything that mixes, like, sex with, like, an unending appetite, like, from a feminine sort of, or, like, a female character's perspective, I'm like, oh, my God, that's so good. It's so interesting because it's such a unacceptable thing in our society, you know? So, and I love that, like, there's this constant threat of, like, men... I think the film is a little bit two-dimensional in that regard, where it's like, oh, this guy, oh, no, was he hitting on your sister? Oh, no, is the janitor going to rape your sister? Oh, no, is this guy going to, you know, and, like, I say it in that tone because I'm like, he was a man of color. Like, I'm not really clear that, like, he did anything creepy or lechy. So there's
I don't think the janitor did anything. I think that was, like... because before it was like all these people that had pissed her off, you know, and it was like, oh, she murdered them and that's fine. But murder the janitor, like he didn't do shit to you. Like this is fucked up.
Yeah, it feels like she's just trying to create excuses like to indulge like her appetite for violence. And like they just keep getting flimsier and flimsier because like she's not actually doing it like because it is right. She just is doing it because she wants to.
I thought it was more so that she was upset that the janitor actually treated Bridget in a non-sexual manner, whereas all of her interactions with other men were very hypersexualized, and that's why she wanted to kill him, because she was still jealous of Bridget's like so-called innocence, because she wasn't being sought after because of like her hypersexuality or that she was seen as being hot or anything like that, because they did just have like a sweet rapport, you know. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I really like that read. That hadn't occurred to me, but I really like that.
Yeah, I think what's really exciting in Ginger Snaps is that even if you do want to root for Ginger, because like I do, I'm like, yeah, go kill everybody. You're a werewolf. That rules. Like, it's clear that she's dealing with some justifications, some jealousy. Like, it's nice to play the jealousy the opposite direction, the way that you just talked about it, Monica, because I think that the obvious read is Bridget being jealous of Ginger because Ginger gets her period and becomes a werewolf. She's got the bounce in her hair, the shine in her face. All the boys are into it. She's into it. And Bridget's, you know, like... greasy hair and like dowdy and like everyone's like, oh, this sullen Bridget. And it's easy to see the read where Bridget's a little bit jealous of, or a lot jealous of Ginger. But the reverse of that is really an interesting read for the whole film. I really, really like that, Monica. That's good shit.
Yeah, because I like to think that when I caught my period, I was really upset because when I was a teenager, I was like, I started developing a lot faster and I got boobs and everything else. And I actually hated the idea that I was starting to capture male attention. I like the fact that I did not have tits before I got my period and I was able to just, you know, exist without any kind of sexual attention. And I think that especially like cis male attention, you know, so like and not having to be like very hyper aware of my body and then like having family members tell me that I couldn't wear certain clothes because it was exposing too much. Yep. And just having like that wish of like being like very prepubescent and having like that so-called quote unquote innocence before like the cis male gaze like turned me into a sexual object. So that's what I took from it, is just that Ginger was upset that because she caught her period, she was thrust into this world where her and her sister had like this secret world where they were able to engage in art and not have like all of this other shit like affecting their lives and like having so-called womanhood like thrust upon her. Because womanhood, quote unquote, can be just as scary as turning into a werewolf in itself.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm like, all of that plus non-binary feels very confusing and upsetting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what I liked about it too, is like, I think fundamentally, while it is a conversation about things that we interpret as feminine, it felt like a character pushing against femininity while sort of parroting it. Mm-hmm. You know, she puts on the outfit. She's got the fucking werewolf teats. Oh my fucking God. You know, she's got like the short, the sexy outfit, and like people still want to fuck her. And I think, like, especially with the everything you've added here, Monica, which is again fantastic, I think, you know, there's this layer of like, she almost has to kill them for having seen her as this feminine sex object, mm-hmm. where she's like, you don't get it. Like, I'm a fucking werewolf, mm-hmm. you know? And like, that's the kind of film I was made for.
Mm-hmm. And I love that, like, the movie isn't afraid to make her look weird as she becomes more werewolfy.
Oh, yeah. Like, she doesn't have to be hot. You're right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I like that, like, she gets kind of, like, weird and wrinkled. And then, like, in the end, she's, like, very grotesque looking. But, like, even when she is more, like, human looking, it's, like it's interesting. Like, she doesn't look repulsive, but she doesn't look, like, attractive.
Yeah.
I'm also just shocked nobody mentioned the pissing blood scene of the jock kid.
I don't think I remember it.
The jock kid, he likes Ginger, like, hooked up with him or whatever, and he thought that he was just like, yeah, finally conquered it. And then he just starts pissing blood. It's so fucking good. It is hilarious.
I love totally that forgot scene. About him, but you're so right. That whole character is amazing because he's like, oh, I'm a badass. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm glad you brought that up. I had completely spaced it.
Hey there, listeners. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Bitches on Comics, the podcast that keeps on going. It just won't die! But today, we want to talk to you about another project that we refuse to let die, which is Decoded Pride. This is our annual Pride Month anthology that we do, but actually right now, we've got the full color PDF available for purchase. Our professionally designed, beautifully laid out, queer as fuck, trans as fuck PDF is available for issue 2. We also have issue 1's PDF available as well, so if you haven't read that yet, get your little grubby mitts on it. You're going to be so happy. You can check out both issues and make a quick purchase, support some independent queer and trans creators, some you say 30 an issue in fact, at decodedpride.com. And we are going to be keeping that PDF up and available forever. So please come buy it. Please support independent queer art. Again, it's decodedpride.com, $14.99 an issue, to help support independent queer and trans creators to tell the stories they want to tell, to create the comics they want to create, and to work together to lift up speculative fiction that is queer and trans.
And I did drawings for it.
Drawings? They're amazing. The drawings are amazing. They're not drawings. They're beautiful, beautiful art.
I did an art.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to both Ginger Snaps and Abby, but let's move forward in time 13 years to 2013 and the film Stoker. Priya, this was your film. Tell us about it.
Yep. Okay. So Stoker is a film about an 18-year-old girl whose dad was killed on her birthday. And in the aftermath of the funeral, her mysterious uncle, who she's never met before, comes to live with them, like with her and her mom at their like huge like gothic house. And the uncle starts sort of like seducing her mom, but also like sort of her as well. And, like, the main character, her name is India. She's always been, like, kind of weird and not fitting in with other kids. And by, like, observing, like, her uncle and stuff, she's, like, started to, like, develop an appetite for violence. And so she just becomes more violent, I guess. And, like, her uncle manipulates her. But she finds her agency. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I became interested in this movie first because, like, I was reading, like, stuff that Wentworth Miller had written because I really liked him on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah. Ooh, he's such a babe, too. Wentworth Miller.
I was like, I'm not Wentworth his
type,
Miller?
But he is my type.
I had to double check, and then I was like, oh, it is him.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, I think he's best known as an actor, but he also wrote this movie. I think it was the first screenplay that he wrote. And
oh, man. What a weirdo. Go on.
And it got turned into a movie. And I just really enjoy this movie because it feels very, like, indulgent and extravagant. It's like, we're going to throw all these, like, gothic tropes at you and you're just going to enjoy it. And I also feel like the movie sort of, I, like, in my head, I call it a gay autism revenge thriller. So Wentworth Miller is gay and autistic. And, like, I don't know, like, how much of, like, that experience he was, like, consciously channeling into writing this movie. But, like, it does, like, resonate on both of those levels, I think. Because it's about these people who are, like, sort of treated differently by their friends and family and don't quite fit in. And sort of how they react to, like, sort of being, like, shoved to the side for just being, like, who they are, even though I guess, like, who they are is, like,
slightly
killing people.
Terrible. Yeah.
I'm just going to jump in there because, Priya, what I loved is, like, this is, like, in some ways it's a Dexter, right? Like, there's, oh, no, you're a murderer and you're going to murder and we have to channel your murder some ways. But where Dexter's dad is like, let's kill some people. Which is like, what in the fuck? Stoker, the dad, is like, let's learn to hunt. Which I'm not saying is not also murder, but does seem like a different kind of killing. Which I thought was really a nice take, actually.
Yeah.
All I could think about while watching this movie was Nicole Kidman's AMC movie advertisement. I was like,
right?
How does this movie compare to her Oscar-winning performance of that movie trailer? Because I don't know. I was very, very troubled.
Yeah.
No. If anything, Nicole Kidman always is really good at playing a messy, drunk, like,
for
lovelorn
real
housewife. I'm just like, I feel like she just does this too naturally. I don't know.
That's what I realized about this movie was because I was just like, yes, this is it's a takeoff basically of Shadow of a Doubt. Have you all seen that movie? It's like an old Hitchcock film. It's like one of his lesser known ones. I think it's the one that he chose as his favorite, but there's very much like an Uncle Charlie, you know, there's like a teen girl who's manipulated. Like there's like, there's a lot of, like nods to it, I guess. And I was thinking about that. And then I was like, you know what, honestly, like whatever happens in this story, it doesn't matter because what I've learned about myself is I will show up to messy, drunk, rich mom, Nicole Kidman, anytime. Like, I'm just here for it.
Yeah, she's great in the movie. I love, there's a scene where, like, I think she is brushing her daughter's hair.
Yeah.
And, like, usually that sort of thing would be, like intimate and, like, loving, but there's such a tension in it because, like, there is not really love there. And so it's very interesting.
Yeah, their lines to each other are absolutely incredible. The scene where she's like, you were supposed to love me, right? And it's just like, why? You don't seem to like her very much. The whole thing, I loved their relationship. And of course, I think that ultimately, like, you know, Uncle Charlie is this threatening figure throughout the entire thing, right? But he just kind of shows how dysfunctional the mother-daughter relationship kind of always was. But it still reveals kind of like a hidden love between them. I wouldn't even put it like, love seems like a weird word, but an acknowledgement, I guess, of one another. They were the most interesting, I think. I loved the dynamic between those two.
Yeah. I also really like, there's a part where India is going to like put ice cream in the freezer and it's like a very large freezer. And it's like, there's no body in it, but like, you know that there's going to be a body in it at just some point. I just love
Chekhov's
that.
Chekhov's gone.
You know, some good foreshadowing, yeah. This is where the body's going.
It. Everyone's like, I've seen horror.
There's another part where Uncle Charlie is like digging in the dirt and he says something like, this is, He says he makes some comment about it being like good for digging, and then like later that comes back because they bury the body. And so that's just really fun.
So is every single like cement ball on the property a dead body or what? Is that what we are left to believe? Because they zoom yes. out and there's like these spheres all over the place.
That's what it's I took from it, Kate. That's what I took.
There's just dead bodies all over that property.
Yeah,
I didn't catch that.
Murder. I didn't catch that either.
And Nicole Kidman trying to maintain and just getting shit wasted all day. Yeah. She's like, it seems weird here. People keep going missing. I don't know.
What can you do?
Let's go for a car drive. Let's go get some ice cream.
Yeah, she was leaving. She was out of there. She's like, I'm not staying at this fucking mansion. It would suck to live at a family like that. And like, oh my God, it's so tense.
And so like, isolated, right? Mm-hmm, like, that's so isolated. The one where you're like, I think of Eyes Without a Face, right? Where it's like the horror of it. There's all of these like graphically horrific things happening in that movie. But in the end, the scariest part is that she's stuck in a house with her dad, right? And that was kind of how this was too, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the weird sex stuff
more? Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, okay. I was expecting you to be the one to take us there, honestly.
Oh, God. Just insight into my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was like, oh, my God, this girl's fucked up. She's masturbating to that guy's broken neck. Like, that's pretty fucked up. And I love, but I thought it was actually ended up, I was like, this seems gratuitous and weird. And then I got to the end and I was like, it was necessary and plot relevant.
It really was.
You know, like that's just me watching anything. I'm like, this is weird. I don't like it. And then I get to the end. I'm like, God damn it. It was perfect. And you know, it's like that, you know, okay, we're going to talk about spoilers. It's from 2013. Get over it. You know, it's the end. Matthew Good is choking Nicole Kidman to death.
Oh my
and
God.
This girl is like watching it, just like sitting there, and you're like, that fucking girl is gonna let him kill her mom, and then what, she's gonna marry her brother? Like, what the fuck am I supposed to think of this? And then she shoots him in the face, and I was like, ah, it's fucking so Priya. Good movie, Priya. I watched it alone at like 1 a.m. in bed next to my partner, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm just a fool. But I was like, Stoker, this will be a vampire movie. I love vampires. Let's do it. And we got into it and I was like, where are the vampires?
I kept waiting for something vampire-y to happen. I mean, everyone was, right? We were all waiting for something vampire-y to happen.
I saw the Hitchcock movie, so not really. But
oh, okay. So sorry,
I was like, this is like a broiling murder mystery. And it's not that much of a mystery.
I looked at the cover, like I looked at the poster wrong, and I didn't think she was holding a pencil in her hand. I thought she had like a prosthetic with a point, and I was like, oh, what's this steampunk vampire movie? Like, and I was like, oh,
that
God
pencil plays a part.
Ooh, I mean, that ending, ACAB, yes.
That was fun. Yeah.
That was and pretty sweet, so, yes.
What a beautiful murder scene, too. It's like you really only get them every now and again, right? Where she's talking to him and she's like, hey, officer, I was just hoping to get your attention. And then he leans in a little bit and poof, like right through the eye, this guy is...
You're dead.
Definitely like goes crawling through a cornfield. And I felt like about the last, from that moment on, this movie was just here. It was rule of cool, like the whole time. Like it was just like, we're ending on a murder scene and it's going to be absolutely beautiful. And it is like he goes crawling through the cornfield. She follows him with a weapon. I don't remember, but you see the splatters of blood, right? That are like going.
It's the pencil.
It's still those pencil. That pencil.
That pencil gets a workout.
She is getting more out of that number two pencil than I have ever gotten out of a number two pencil. And I draw a lot. So that is saying something. But she's like going to town on this cop and like the blood is splattering over the flowers.
Yeah, I love that because it's these white flowers and then the blood splashes them and makes them red.
Yeah.
I just think that's so gorgeous.
And the song
the whole
is
movie was beautiful.
It's like, a beautifully honestly, shot film, yeah.
It's just like a kind of sumptuous to watch.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
right
moisture
word.
Dripping
yeah.
off of the things, all slow-mo and stuff. There's a lot of scenes
like
that.
Well, it's like very
that.
Sexy and mm-hmm. then very incesty and very beautiful. And then you're like, what? This is me at 2 a.m. just going, what the goddamn fuck is happening?
He's wearing Matthew the Good, pants.
You sexy bitch.
Of the brother that are too big for him. There's like all of this like allegory to it that's really fun.
I can't. It's too
good. My belt would have been too small to strangle people to death with. I'm glad I took your father's. And you're just like, this is great. Thanks, Uncle Charlie. I mean, you're really set up. That's like a terrible. Yeah. Anyway, this guy and his big pants, his two big pants.
But yeah. I'm not even sure I would consider it a good movie, but I really like it. And I'm glad you guys enjoyed it, too.
I had fun.
Oh, it's a fucking weird movie.
I thought it was beautifully shot. That's what caught my attention for the most part.
The angles are really good, right? Because you'll have these scenes where when she's feeling smaller in the beginning, the way that they shoot her changes throughout the movie, which is really interesting to watch, right? Because there's scenes in the beginning where she's standing underneath him on the staircase. There's scenes where he's looking down on her. There's scenes where she enters the room and she sees him and her mother flirting at the piano. And she's in the bottom left of the screen. And, you know, like covered in water, like rainwater, you know, looking very small. And then as the movie goes along, she looks like a like bigger presence.
Yeah, because she's like coming into her own by killing people, which sometimes that's okay. That happens sometimes.
You had to, with your family, kid, you know, God bless. You're a little villanelle out here.
One last thing I want to mention is that the singer Mitski, who I really like, she released a song that's like based on this movie. It's called Stay Soft. And the music video like heavily references the film. And I love it because I think a lot of Mitski fans who don't know this movie, they just think it's like a song, it's about this movie.
What? Okay, I know that song. I have to go listen to it again now. Priya, that was good shit right there. Mm-hmm. What I was going to say was, I never know what I'm going to get when Priya recommends something to me. Because it might be incest murder stoker, and it might be a Christian werewolf novel. I do not know what's going to happen, and I love it. It makes it very unpredictable and fun. I was like, Stoker, this will be a nice midnight watch.
Put you right to sleep.
What is that? It was delightful.
I'm so glad it's time to talk about the movie that I chose, the one that is me. It is Good Manners 2017. Welcome to the Sarah Century podcast, where I talk about movies that I like that have gay stuff and are art house. So this movie I watched, I'm going to say maybe on Shudder or something. It was certainly at 2 o'clock in the morning. I have consistently throughout my life watched tons of horror movies. I'll go to sleep for like 2 hours and then I'll wake up, be like, you know, what am I going to do? Wander around my apartment and or I'm going to put on a horror movie. So I'm pretty sure it happened in one of those kind of states, which is fitting because this movie is really dreamy just in general. There's a lot of beautiful scenes, absolutely gorgeous cinematography. And it is about a woman named Clara who takes on a job that, you know, like, God bless, right? Like, it is a job where even the interview, you're like, how is this going through? She ends up working as a, is it nanny, I guess, is like what her job ends up being. I mean, she ends up doing everything for this person, right?
She's like a night nurse.
She's like a night nurse that works all of the time.
Night nurse.
But a day nurse. She's an always nurse.
I think they're like, oh, be a nanny. And then she's like, I'll go ahead and clean your kitchen. But like this person, the mom, right? It's a pregnant woman. And she's like, my family has all this money and everything. I'm like a rich person. However, she's in fact not a rich person because she took off. Like she left like her husband. She had an affair. They wanted her to get in, like get the kid, like have an abortion or whatever. She refused. She didn't want to do it. She wants to have the kid, carry the kid to term, right? So Clara kind of comes in on this situation and starts being like, hey, have you noticed that like I'm not getting paid at all? Like, could you do something about that? And Anna is like, yeah, of course, but can't, because not only does she have the family troubles, but she's going to give birth to a werewolf, right? So she has this baby werewolf, but it dies, right? So there's like this kind of moment where the movie just kind of becomes a different movie, I feel like, because in the beginning, they're kind of setting up this dynamic between these two, and they have kind of... like, I would say a romance. I think it qualifies as a romance. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. We'll get into it. But this other part of the movie is Clara has this child that she wants to ditch and run away from. And then she's just like, well, she doesn't have the child, right? Is Anna's child, who she dies during childbirth. Clara takes over and is like, okay, I'm going to do away with this kid. Then I'm going to take off. Live the life of my dreams far away from here. Instead, this little baby werewolf makes baby werewolf face at her. And she's like, oh my God, it's so cute. So instead, she names him Joel and raises him as her own child. And they kind of catches up with him whenever he's around 7 years old. So they have this whole arc where it's basically... Clara's trying to protect Joel and trying to protect everybody, I guess, but mostly Joel as kind of the parental figure, and keeps trying to instill this system, you know, like, you can't do werewolf things. I will lock you in the room, you know, during the full moon. And he puts him in chains and everything. And ostensibly, of course, this is to keep him safe. But I think, like, the biggest strength of the movie is that you can't keep people safe, right? Like, people are going to do what they're going to do. It's kind of the same as Anna, right? Like, Anna was just like, I'm leaving this life of luxury because I can't imagine not carrying this child to term. So she does, but it's, like, what brings about her end. And then Clara and Joel go through this whole, you know, story arc where it's essentially the same thing. She loves Joel very much and then is also kind of scared of Joel, because who wouldn't be? It's like a baby werewolf. Lots of bad things happen. But I think that that's kind of like the primary theme of it, right? So I love it because of that. Like, I think that all of the best moments in my life are when I am trying too hard and I'm trying to make things adhere to a rule system. And then at a certain point, you're like, not only do I not get to decide what the rules are, like, I can't, you know, no one person does, but also you can't control things. You can't control your werewolf baby, like, from, you can't make that baby not be a werewolf. So at a certain point, you kind of have to decide if you're along for the ride or not. And Clara decides that she is. And it has, like, the most beautiful ending. It's just an absolutely gorgeous movie. So it has all of the things I love: sad, gay, beautifully shot, werewolves, scary, is still scary, even though it's mostly, like, beautiful. It's more beautiful, right?
Oh, it's very
scary. But it's,
scary,
like, terrifying. Though. There's so many scary parts. People die, you know? But it's very sympathetic. So I think that that's kind of the thing that I loved, was I was, like, relating to that main character and being like, yes, so often I will, you know, there will be times in your life where you try to do something good. And at a certain point, you're like, I don't think this is good anymore because I'm just, like, trying too hard or something. But it takes a long time to start realizing that, right? So I think that that was a character that I loved a lot. And I loved everything that she was going through and dealing with through the movie. Did everybody else like it?
Yes, I love this movie.
Yeah.
I love that it's two movies.
Yeah, it's two movies.
I think all of us, when we watched it, we were like, oh, this is a very Sarah Sentry movie.
Yeah.
Sarah, I said that you wrote this novel at some point.
That's what it seems like, right? Because I was like, this central character, it's like, through the whole thing, I don't see a single moment when she's not essentially trying to do the right thing. Like, she's trying to be a good person and a helpful person. And it doesn't matter. You can go through your life trying at every turn to do the right thing, and you're still going to fuck up all over the place. Like, you can't. That's the thing. It's like, you can't control it. Like, at a certain point, you kind of have to be like, I don't know. Like, Joel, my werewolf baby is just going to be a werewolf sometimes, y'all.
And she had to come to that reality too. And at the end, the only thing that she could do was be like, okay, you know, eat me if you want to, but like, I don't know what else to do, you know? I think that, was that a line? She's like, I don't know what else to do, you know? She just like put up her hands and like, but then by that point, it's like, is it too late? And it ends on this question mark and you're like, okay.
And they stand against the lynch mob together. Like there's all these.
Yeah, they do. Hand in hand. Yeah. She takes the little werewolf boy's hand.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. Isn't it? That was the part. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the part.
That's the thing that messes me up because I'm just like, that's it. Right. Like that's this movie. The way that it encapsulated too much of my feelings where I was like, no kidding. Because like at a certain point, you're just like, you're all fucked up. But like, you're my friend, you know, like I have to help you. And I'm going to try to join with you, you know, like let's fight. Because guess who's worse than you for sure is like this mob of people outside who are trying to kill you. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part of the movie is before Anna has the baby and she's she like won't eat anything. And Clara is making her spaghetti and she cuts her hand and like puts some of her own blood in the spaghetti. And then like she doesn't tell Anna, but then she eats it. And I just think that's so beautiful. That really captivated me.
Yeah, honestly, that I wrote that down. I was like, my favorite part is when she puts her blood in the spaghetti because to me, I'm wondering, like, why is Clara doing this? Is she doing it because she's, like, really giving and wants her to have her blood? Or is she just curious if she's, like, thirsty when she's also lucid and not just in the nighttime, you know? Like, it's kind of this test, like, feeding her blood.
I like the creepy nighttime scenes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The creepy, sexy, bloody, bitey. Yeah, like weird sex stuff is what I've learned from our conversation.
There is some weird sex stuff. Yeah.
Learned is a lie. I knew this already about myself. I texted Sarah like as I was watching it because I got like 40 minutes in and it was right before the big turn. And I was like, I think that my partner would love this. Sarah, do you think Emily would like this? And Sarah was like, oh my God, Emily would love this. I was like, okay. So I saw the first 40 minutes twice. And yeah, the second time through, knowing what was coming, I was just like, every frame is perfect. Every frame is thought out and intentional. Oh my God. You know what my fucking favorite part is? Is the way that they showed the passage of time by the growth of the vegetation outside of her shitty apartment.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually my favorite part of the entire film. It was just beautiful and it's symbolic, right? There's this fecund growth in her life with Joelle. I was like, she's like, his name is so beautiful, Joelle. And I was like, ugh. In English, Joel. It's just Joel. Not so sexy. But Joelle, you know, the growth of Joelle and Clara's life and Clara's literal hair growth, you know, all of the pieces. It was just such a beautiful, simple moment. And I think the other favorite part I have is that it's two films, you know? It's like, it's the before and then the after of this moment. And I love the sort of breakdown of how those two things happen.
I love that they love this kid. There's just like so much about it. Because in the end, she chooses the kid just the same way as Anna did, right? So there's a lot to it, I think. And also, this is a movie where every part of it is beautiful. So like, it's hard for me to say, is there a perfect part? Because I think that this is a perfect movie. I love the way that it does change. I love the way that this movie keeps me on my toes. I definitely didn't expect it to turn out the way that it did. But it was one of those things, if you will, pull to Sarah Century, where at the end it's just like, and punch to the chest, now you're crying. And I love that. That's like always what I love so much in movies. And I think that this movie just nailed it. Like every part of it is great. Wonderful protagonist, like such a great protagonist who's like trying to live life, honestly, like at so many parts. And it's like, it can't be that simple for you. You got to understand.
Well, the first third, you know, the first act really made me, I was like, this has big Parasite vibes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the power differential, the sort of, you know, the layers of attraction, the sort of faking out to get things. And then it was just like exploded from there. And I was like, oh my God, this is my favorite werewolf movie. Easily.
Yeah. One thing that I really appreciated about it is that it is a horror movie that like doesn't demonize lesbianism, because like it does have some parts where like the werewolfiness of Anna is sort of like combined with like her attraction mm-hmm. to Clara, but then it also, I feel like their love is not like portrayed as inherently bad.
Right.
And I, like, I was surprised that, like, I actually, like, that stood out to me, because, like, it should be kind of standard, but I guess in horror movies so much, like, it's not, so I just really liked
that. And the conformity is straight up the villain of the story. Like, there's something just really mm-hmm. great about that, where the people who are trying to make it be a different way kind of end up being so much more the villain than anybody else.
Mm. Mm. Good manners. Good shit, more love.
I was really annoyed by the landlady.
Yes, singing her little fucking songs.
Yeah.
Stealing her goddamn microwave.
Amelia, oh. Amelia. And like when she wanted to like perform an exorcism on Joelle.
After feeding him
after
meat.
Feeding
oh my God,
him
Sarah.
Meat after, yeah.
The veganism, yeah. like fucking narrative. I was like, Sarah, fucking century.
it's oh very much, it's yeah, it's just like the everyday like villains, right? And I also think that that was a pretty intricate part of like how Clara and Anna's relationship was, because Anna was ultimately demonized by her parents by not like doing what they were trying to, you know, preserve her for, you know, coming from like a wealthy family and her just like trying to take this dive. And I think that like the lesbianism like portion of this movie was also representative of that, of Anna rebuking everything that she had grown into. And that also goes back to Abby and respectability politics, and even though she like ultimately
yes.
decided to just like sacrifice herself, that was still ultimately her choice, and she was doing everything that she wanted to do with her fucking life, even if that meant eating blood and spaghetti.
Yeah,
like she's gonna do
it's her life.
It's her life.
Let her eat the spaghetti.
She's
blood
gonna
okay
do it. Yeah,
who doesn't like a nice blood?
A nice bloody spaghetti.
Yeah, there was also a cat with a hat on, though, in that movie. Just wanted to say.
Oh my God, you're right.
I was
the
also
cat
thinking
was
the
birthday
hat. A brief cat with a hat.
Yeah, it does seem like I wrote it, right? Like,
yes.
I feel like you're gaslighting us, Sarah, and that you actually did write this. Like, and you're just like.
Just showing up being like, hey, everybody, watch this movie. I had somebody do that
ever
with
hear
music
of this
one
movie?
Time where they were like, they put on their music and then they were like, what do you think? And then at the end, they were like, it was me. I'm the one who made this music. And I was like, no.
I gave a real opinion.
I didn't actually, but I was like sensing that the situation
smart
was weird, right? So like that's why I didn't. And then at the end it was like, haha, it's me. And I was like, it's so good, while I'm like backing out of the door anyway.
You know, honestly, it's so good. I have to go, I guess. Have a great yeah. No, we got to do the Abby. I'm going home, bitch.
I'm going home, bitch.
See, yeah, Abby really is the hero. You're just like,
truly.
If only, if you know what? Next time I leave a room.
Same. I'm fucking, you know what? In 5 minutes, brace yourselves. Okay, so let's jump forward one more time in time. We're going to go to Censor 2021.
Okay. So the synopsis of this fucking movie. Oh, my God. So, okay, this lady's a censor in Britain. She decides what movies can be publicized and which movies have to be, like, pulled. And this was a real thing that happened, but the historical significance ends there. So she is known as this, like, Miss Perfect, and she, like, censors everything, but this one movie is all fucked up, and she, like, approves it. And then there's, like, this murder, and she connects it to the movie that she approved, and then she gets approached by this producer who's, like, this film guy wants you to personally approve his movie that he's making. She fucking watches it, and then she feels like she sees her sister.
Who went missing when,
went
she, was
missing
a
when
child,
she was a child.
We find out.
Yeah, we find out that there's this whole thing where her sister went missing. Anyway, she thinks she sees her sister, so she goes into this guy's basically film set, this guy, Frederick North. And she's convinced that she sees her sister in this actor, and she's like trying to find her, and she ends up, like, some fucked up shit ends up happening. She kills a couple people in this movie. It's fucking gory in a couple parts.
She
it's really gory.
Actors in a movie that she thinks is reality.
Yeah, she goes home to her parents' house, and like she's bringing her sister home, and like this woman, this actor at the end, at the very end, is like, dude, pleading with this stranger's parents who just murdered some people and kidnapped her and took her and is like completely, is that what happened? Who knows? Because there's this whole ending where it was beautiful and everything, but yeah, that doesn't seem real.
They're like, you're so smart and right about everything. And she's like, oh my God, yeah. There's like,
and then there's like that static and that like rut, like that jump, like cut where you're like, wait, yeah, wait, what? What's actually happening? That girl looks scared. She looks happy. She looks scared. She looks happy. Wait, are we in the film? Are we out of the film? I texted Kate immediately after watching this and was like, this is me. And it was someone, it was a gif of someone being like, what is, oh, it was actually Morbius from The Matrix being like, what is reality? What makes something real? And I was like, that is me after watching Sensor. Yes. I don't know fucking anything.
Thank you for sending me that gif.
I mean, this movie is like ultimately about gaslighting, essentially. Mm-hmm. So actually, Sarah told me about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was like 2021 when I watched this. And I have read some think pieces about this movie. And there were a lot of like topics. Like, some people were talking about like this movie was representative of like trauma responses and like how it can relate to like how people are now adding trigger warnings to certain things and like how we should always like be cognizant of like how certain like things can trigger people into, you know, traumatic like flashbacks and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I do have PTSD, and I do have like some things that are just like completely like mind numbing to me. Like if I see it, like it just takes me back to like a space, and like it, I just like ultimately don't want to view anything, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the movie does like a really good job of like trying to like commit Enid as kind of like, even though she's kind of like this very like, I wouldn't say prudish. No, not prudish.
Not really.
She's more strict, right?
Like strict.
She's more like strict and very like, you know, cold and like, I wouldn't say hard, but like, yeah. So like, she's just very much like aligned to like her ways. And they kind of like dress her up as like being like this kind of like perfect person with a very traumatic like past. But it's like very... Oh, wait, should I give spoilers now or should I wait?
We spoiled the ending.
Oh, yeah,
spoil away.
It's too late now.
But it's kind of like the twist is that actually Enid is the really fucked up person, mm-hmm. you know? So, like, I think that the movie did, like, a really good job, because I feel like some horror movies do a really bad job of doing, like, the gaslighty twist, because it's, like, very all the clues are there that, like, this person mm-hmm. is ultimately, like, the baddie. But this movie did a really good job of character development, I feel, for Enid.
Yeah.
Especially as a censor. I feel like censors, they just don't get a lot of sympathy, right? So,
well, yeah. And I also think about that. I was thinking about that documentary about the MPAA.
Yeah.
And what their protocols are and how they rate films.
This like, film they, is not she yet made, rated. Like, is it that one?
I think it's that one. Yeah. But she like made an example of like how American Beauty got like a rated R. But I'm a Cheerleader, like initially received an NC-17. Rating because of like the scene of like Natasha Lyonne like masturbating,
which is a classic, whatever, against, by the way,
in the bathroom, yeah, with the shocker or whatever.
Yep. Stop objectifying, so yeah, that's women. Initially shock.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so I thought that was like one of the classic points, because one, I don't think I would have watched this film if Sarah hadn't told me about it, because I don't really feel like it's made its rounds in that sense.
Yeah, sure.
But I do think that it did an incredible job of also playing back to that whole idea of, I'm trying to think of a different word.
Mind-bending.
Yeah. I like to think that like most normies are like serial killers, you know? And Enid mm-hmm. was kind of like that like picture perfect like normie who's just like doing her job, and people would chastise her because they thought that her ties were laced a little too tight, you know. But in the end, like, she was ultimately the one that was like
she was not straight laced.
She was not straight laced. And I love movies like that, because I ultimately think that the weirdos are the ones that are always regarded as being like the killers and the weirdos. But like, this film in particular was, it was good. I liked it. And I also thought it was beautifully shot.
Yeah.
And the gore
and just like the vintage like videos, like scenes, like that was just like,
oh man,
so culty and so good.
So good. And really fucked with your sense of real, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. And that's what I'm saying.
And that was so well done.
It did a really great job at gaslighting all of us, which I think is like really hard to do sometimes in horror films because it's been done so many times before and it can get really cliche and the twist can be really wild. But like, I actually was genuinely surprised, honestly. Yeah.
Oh, I was shocked to fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what the fucking fuck? And then something that Sarah and I have been talking a lot about, you know, horror endings. And hey, welcome. It's Halloween month. We're talking about horror. So yes, we've been talking about endings. And we've been talking about the way that, like, those happy endings feel tacked on. Even in Abby, we talked about that today. It kind of felt tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that what Censor did was like, let me give you the happy ending. I'm going to give
it to
you.
But it is not what you want.
She's going to save the fucking day. But guess what? You can't trust a thing this bitch sees. And that is, I will sit with that probably for the rest of time. Like, mm-hmm. That was so well, it was so well established and then like flipped. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I loved it. And the way they used like, one of you filmy babies has to tell me what it's called. But you know, like the aspect ratio is different between mm-hmm. like film and TV.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they played with those aspect ratios mm-hmm. in a way that kind of fucked with your head. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. What a movie. Do I like it? No. Do I love it? Yes.
There was the scene that sticks out to me because it does have a lot of scenes that I think are really hard hitting, right? And it has a lot of commentary because, as you noted, video nasties was like a thing. The VHS horror movies that you could only buy under the counter at the video store and all of this kind of thing. It was a huge cultural thing right around the same time we were having good old satanic panic, right? So they kind of overlapped with one another in a way. And they were both major censorship issues. It also kind of preempted a lot of the stuff that would soon be going on with the world of music, right? So mm-hmm. there has always been this kind of wave of censorship that generally targets things that people already would find questionable, right? Like something that's like a slasher film or something. I loved the scene where she goes to dinner with her parents and they are going to say, they're going to finally declare her sister as dead, right? Like they're finally mm-hmm. going to do the paperwork. They're like, hey, we wanted to tell you it's been like 20 years. They're doing the paperwork and there's this scene of she's like, no, you can't do that. We don't know that she's gone. And literally, like, this whole scene plays out where you just see how the whole thing is going to go. Like, you almost see, like, that this is, like, a completely broken human being, right? Because, and it's, like, they do it in this way that I think is so subtle. Because they're like, you're not going to do this again. Don't do this again, right? And you get this long-standing context of her obsession with her sister. And everybody else being like, why did you do it? And like, why wasn't it you that this happened to? So in a lot of ways, she feels that bringing her sister back is going to fix everything. Like there's somebody who's gone who, if they were present, then things would be different. The world would be a better place, right? And maybe they'll take her instead. And I think that there's so much of this film is basically like, why not me? Survivor's guilt, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All of those things is a very meta movie, of course, because it's a movie about horror movies. You always got all that fun interplay happening, like, ooh, who's the viewer now, you know? And like all of that kind of stuff.
I love that shit.
It really doesn't let up, right? Like, it's one of those movies where it kind of has this, like, kind of a teaser opening in a way. Like, the first, like, 20 minutes, they're kind of like, she's so much a viewer of what's horrible in the world. And then it's just kind of like, the hits keep coming after that. Like, once the mask is off, the mask is, like, off, off, off. Like, the rest of the movie is just kind of her just increasingly out of control.
Yeah.
I love how it's a movie about someone who, like, so much has gone wrong in her life, and she tries to make up for that by, like, It's like she tries to control things that are ultimately out of her control. Because, like, the reason that she cares so much about her job is that she thinks, like, if she just censors movies in the right way, then nobody will, like, commit violence. And, like, that's not how the world works. Mm-hmm. But, like, it feels very real as, like, a response to something that happened that was so traumatic to her in her life. And so I really love that.
Yeah, totally. It was, like, the whole don't go in the church film that she saw a little bit of, like, in all the flashbacks she was having about when she was little with her sister and her going missing. It was just like this. It definitely fucked with your sense of reality and, like, wait a minute, like, did this happen? I don't know. Probably not.
I love how it, there's that, like, repeating shot of, like, the red-haired girl, like, turning to look at you. Mm-hmm. And, like, I love how it makes that scary because, like, in another context, it wouldn't be scary. But in this movie, it feels scary.
Yeah.
Yes, Priya, that's the perfect segue. That's what I needed someone to say. Thank you. Because I think that there's another version of this film that's a farce. There are all the makings of comedy here. Direction is art. It is so wonderful. I love this movie so much. I don't know if I'll watch it again, but I do think I'll think about it a lot. Do you know what I mean? Like, where I'm just gonna think about her fucking murdering that guy in, like, a ditch. It's just murder. So much murder.
There's a lot of murder.
There's a lot of murder.
That's probably our only slasher of the films.
Yeah.
There's a line in it when she is, like, after she's killed the guy and she's running after the actress and she's like, you're my sister. And the actress is like, I have a sister and she's not you. And that, like, made me laugh for some reason. I think you're right about how, like, it has, like, the makings of, like, something funny, but the way it's presented is not funny.
Yeah.
And then sometimes is at the end. There, it gets to a certain place where you're like, when she's like, I'm protecting the whole world, it's like you almost can't help but kind of crack up. But yeah, exactly. It's not presented to be that way. It's, like, definitely presented to be like, this is a bleak horror film. This was also the director's first feature, from what I understand. And I think that that's absolutely amazing. So
well done.
Yeah. Prano Bailey Bond. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to pronounce her name, but yeah. Where's she from?
I think maybe British. I'm not 100%, but...
Welsh. Yeah, she's Welsh.
Ah.
Anyways, yeah.
Also, can I just say I love when the guy dies from his trophy.
Oh, yeah.
He gets stabbed by his own trophy.
Yeah. That's not a great scene. Yeah. It's pretty brutal.
When that happens, I was like, oh, shit, this bitch is going to kill some people.
And it did kind of flip the script a little bit, right? Because I remember him being, like, a sketchball, but it was, like, not quite. He was, like, at a certain point, he's like, wait, no, what? Right? I don't quite remember. Or it might have been in the weird trailer park in the woods or whatever, where this guy's like, no, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, like, the guy who, like, has sort of what is at least meant to be played as, like, a grotesque visage. Right, okay. And so she's, like, looking into his face and she's like, oh my gosh, this is the man who took my sister. Like, that.
He's like, what?
She's looking so much for that catharsis. And so she finds it even when it's not there, right? Like, oh, it's so convenient to have someone who looks grotesque be the bad guy. And it's like, sorry, baby girl. That's probably not what went down.
Yeah. We are never going to find out, and your parents are always going to hate you for it. Like, it's about all we got. Mm.
And now you've murdered people. And,
well, they're not going to claim you any more now than they did yesterday.
Oh, man. Imagine being those parents. Whew. One kid disappeared. One kid turns into a murderer for seemingly
also
no reason.
Also, imagine living with those parents, right? Of, like, just a high key hoping that you had been the one who died, like, for the rest of your life.
That's so wild. That's so well played in it, that tension. You know, they do so little to establish it, I feel like, compared to, like, what the weight it has. It's always in these implied lines, like you were saying,
I feel,
Sarah,
like that's how it'd be, right?
They're like, not again.
I feel like that's how it would be, right? Like, if they wouldn't outwardly say anything, like, but the way that they imply that it's kind of her fault and they wish it was her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Also, I recently watched season one of Batwoman. And so then when I was watching this show, there was like similarities. And so I was expecting the actress like to actually be her sister. And so when it wasn't... It was like, I don't know, it was funny, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think I did also want it to be the sister. I can't help myself. Watching a horror film, some part of me is always rooting for a happy ending, knowing that's just not how it works, you know? Yeah. But like some part of me is like, she's going to find her sister.
I mean, like happy endings are relative, right? Like, I guess yeah, Stoker sure. isn't a horror movie exactly, but it sort of has a happy ending.
And it's sort of a horror movie. Yeah.
I mean, who's happy here?
I think Ginger Snaps has kind of a happy ending for Bridget, yeah. You know? Like, she gets to, like... Well, I guess not, because she dies... She lays on top of her dead sister. You know what? I'm taking it back.
I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Ginger Snaps, but I love that we don't know if she's going to stay a werewolf or take the cure. Like, I guess in the sequels, I guess mm-hmm. we would find out, but I love the ambiguity of that.
You know, mm-hmm. and that's true of a lot of these movies, how they end. You know, there is an ambiguity. Even Abby, which has like that sort of clean ending. To me, it felt like, you know, I've been listening to a lot of audio horror, and it felt like it was just missing one more line, which was like, and then Abby heard a noise at the window. You know what I mean? Like that line that's like, it's over. No, it's not, bitch. And I feel like each of the films had a little bit of that. You know, from Stoker, she's literally stabbing a cop. Good Manners, they're fighting a mob. Mm-hmm. Ginger Snaps, you know, you're like, oh, this is sad, but this can't be the end. And then Censor, it's like, oh my God, what the fuck's going to happen next?
Yeah, that's a good weave of all of the
I love it.
The movies.
Yeah, this was fun. This was really fun. Yeah, I didn't, you know, we span what?
Well, with Monica, this movie, it was like 74, so.
Yeah, so nearly 50 years, the bulk of them being in the 2000s. Plus, I mean, is this still, no, this is the 2000s. I don't know. Is 2022 the 2000s?
I don't know.
I've had two beers. I can't tell what time is anymore.
Yeah, I like that I watched a bunch of movies I wouldn't have watched probably. And then I like that I got to have you guys watch Stoker and I got to talk about it.
Yeah, that was fun.
This is my favorite part of doing movies on the pod is like, I wouldn't pick up these movies to watch on my own. And then I'm so happy I did.
Yeah, same. I'm so happy we watched all these movies. Thank you.
I'm happy too. And I'm glad to have you back on the pod, Kate. I haven't talked to you in a minute. So it's always nice
it's been a while.
Catch up on, you know, just bullshit, basically.
Horror movies
talking
and bullshit.
About the things that are bullshit, like horror movies that we liked, which whenever you brought up Censor, I was like, okay, let's talk about that. What was the other one that you recommended, though? I forgot.
Oh, I was kind of interested in watching Dolly Dearest or talking about
That's
it.
That's right.
Because I've seen it, but...
I haven't seen that one. I'll watch it, though.
It's pretty great. It's also directed by a lady, I think. And Denise Crosby is in it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to choose a Nick Cage movie next time. Well, this has been remarkable. Dear listeners, make sure you check out Abby, Ginger Snaps, Stoker, Good Manners, and Censor. Maybe in that order, maybe in whatever order feels right to you. If you have seen them and think our opinions are poo, keep it to yourself. If you've seen them and you have fun things to say, hit us up on Twitter because then we're cool. But if you just have to tell me my opinions are bad, like, listen, I know my opinions are bad. They're mine. I have to live with them every day. This has been absolutely incredible. Priya, Kate, thank you for being our special guests here. Both of you, if you want to just share where people could find you on social media or online. Priya, let's start with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on the episode. It was really fun. You can follow me on Twitter at Letters of Priya. I just... tweet about whatever. But yeah, I think that's where you can find me.
Yeah, I am a ghost online. Probably just Mirror Fears on Twitter and Instagram. And then probably my band too, because that's the other one I check all the time, Churchfire 666 on Instagram, Churchfire Music on the other things.
Very thematically appropriate.
Right, yeah. Oh, I really did love that scene in Abby in the church where she's fucking singing and then coughing and then fighting and then laughing and then she's aggressive. It's like the whole gamut.
Beating the shit out of that guy and then having a real giggle about it.
these movies. If I had to give them a theme, it would be We Chose Them. Yeah, truly amazing. Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Patrons, you make the world of Bitches on Comics go round. If you're not a patron, come join us. I don't have a hot sell item here. Just like, do you like us? Then join us. And yeah, Sarah, you know I love you. Monica, you know I think you're the tits. And I hope everyone has a great Halloween. Keep it spooky, people. Let us know what you're up to.
What are you going
to
dress up as? Tweet us. What are you going to dress up as for Halloween?
I was like, oh, are you asking me? Like, Let me think about it.
I'm making a request to the listeners for the first time in my life.
Yeah,
you guys.
Listeners, what are you going to be for Halloween?
I'm thinking of being Tendi from Star Trek Lower Decks.
Get out. Oh my God. I don't think I'm going to be anything.
Yeah.
But if I am going to be something, right now my friend is trying to get me to be Laszlo from What We Do in the Shadows.
Nice.
And then my partner could be Nandor.
Oh my God.
And that'd be really fun.
I'm going to go as the lady from Censor.
Because you just have that outfit.
Just have a nice little like 80s scarf on and I'm good to go. Come on.
Priya, are you going to go as the Stoker girl?
No, literally, I actually am thinking of doing that.
Oh, send us the photo.
Of course.
That's beautiful. All right, everyone, you rule.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram at @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes. And we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com. And Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm S.E. Fleenor. You can learn more about me at sefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.